And tonight we're really happy to have Scott Jurek joining us. And Scott is a world-renowned ultramarathoner. In fact, he may be the world-renowned ultramarathon champion. He's prominently appeared in two New York Times bestsellers, Born to Run and the 4-Hour Body. He now has a best-selling book of his own, Eat and Run. Scott trains and races on a vegan diet. And he hails from just outside of Proctor, right here in the Northland. He has won so many races that I'm not about to cover them all, but I think most prominently he won the Western States Ultra Trail 100 7 times in a row. That I think was 1999 through, what would that be, 2006, I believe. Scott and we'll cover some of the other races during this interview, but also the Badwater 135 and the Hard Rock 100, and those have to be three of the toughest races you'll find anywhere. Thank you so much for joining us here tonight, Scott.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I can't even imagine, and I know I read a book by a New York Times writer, I believe his last name was Johnson, about the Badwater quite a few years ago, and as I read that book, I thought, these guys are nuts, because you were running in that race from the lowest point and the hottest point in the United States, Death Valley, up to Mount Whitney, and in the hottest time of the year, I believe it's July, is it July?
That's right.
And then also, of course, you start at the hottest time of the day just so that you have the most exposure to the heat. That is just a testament to human will, as far as I'm concerned, to put up with those kind of temperatures and run 135 miles in barren, hot country. And I guess it speaks to the type of endurance that you have and have had for a number of years. But it all kind of started, as I mentioned, you grew up in Proctor, in the little town of Proctor, in early life that really with your mother having MS and your dad being a little overwhelmed by it all, you started off with a lot of responsibilities for a young boy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my childhood definitely made me who I am, and I think that's, some people maybe regret things about their childhood or they wish things weren't the way they were, but at the time it wasn't fun and it wasn't something that I really understood. But growing up with a mother who couldn't do such simple tasks as loading laundry and making meals and cleaning the house, and that of course became my brother and sister and I's duties and things we had to do at a very young age. And having a father who was working shift work and making ends meet with a single family provider. And it was one of those things. Yeah, I grew up, splitting wood and picking rocks out in the garden and cutting grass and doing all of that out in the country. And some things I maybe didn't get to experience, play sports as much as I wanted to or done other things with my friends. But, it made me who I am, and it made me stronger and tougher and somebody who can kind of get through tough moments in these races, but also it's helped me with, getting through challenges in life.
And somewhere along the line in your teens, you ran into a fellow named Dusty Olson, and he couldn't be more opposite than you. You were the, I believe you were the valedictorian in your high school class, and you went on to get a master's in physical therapy, and Dusty never took any of that very seriously.
Yeah, and I think there are individuals that, we can learn from all people, and that was something that, again, I've had a lot of friends over the years where I'm like, people are always like, why do you hang out with this person, or I try to find these qualities in individuals that I can learn from and, grow myself. And I think that's the cool thing about the sport of ultramarathoning. It's brought me into contact with all sorts of individuals, from my buddy Rick Miller, who was a Special Forces Navy diver and fought in many conflicts. And, we would discuss, everything from politics to things such as, the defense program. And it's it's those types of interactions that you have with, you know, people. And then I have, you know, my buddy Bill Key, who painted Harleys for a living, used to be in a motorcycle gang, was, you know, into all sorts of trouble and addictions, and he found running. And I think that's the beauty of running. It's a source, it's a new source of entertainment or a hobby, but it's also a way to interact with others and to grow. And, you know, ultramarathons might sound crazy to the common individual, but it's those moments in ultramarathons that kind of shred you down to the, basically to your raw self, you know, when you're puking your guts out in Death Valley, dehydrated, your legs feel like somebody's beat them with baseball bats. Those tough moments that you get through make you stronger and give you a lot more mental fortitude in other areas of your life. So I think individuals like Dusty and, you know, my buddy Hippie Dan from Duluth, Minnesota, those are individuals that help us, you know, figure out our own life and help us grow as individuals.
It seems that he had a special power to motivate you. And as I read the book and so many of the challenges that you took on, and including a couple of races where, you know, you tore ligaments in an ankle and you still were able to persevere, and your experience with Badwater, it seemed like you were just looking for Dusty to start screaming at you.
Yeah, you know, he has an interesting way of, you know, I guess, keeping running fun. And I think for some people, you know, they're like, why is that guy hollering at you? And why would you put up with that? And, you know, maybe it's just growing up with a father who was in the military and, you know, kind of having that drill sergeant attitude. But, you know, Dusty kept things fun, too. We joke and laugh along the way. And, you know, when you're out there for 26 hours on a course like the Hard Rock 100 with, you know, over 32,000 feet of climbing and 32,000 feet of descent, and, you know, it's like you're breathing through a cocktail straw when you're out there running because the air is so thin, because you're running at altitude, an average altitude of over 10,000 feet. You know, you have to find some, you know, fun in that, even though it's hard work, and that's something that Dusty, you know, has maintained, and that's what, you know, really a pacer should do. A pacer should, you know, keep things light and fun, but also when you need a little bit of a kick in the butt, you do that and make sure you're eating and drinking when you should.
Yeah, very definitely. He, as you mentioned, I believe in your book, that he's a very talented individual and maybe even more physically talented than you were as a runner.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, I was just, you know, trying to get into Nordic skiing in high school, and, you know, Dusty, you know, was one of the top juniors in the country throughout his career, and phenomenal kayaker. I mean, you name it, he's paddled around Lake Superior. So as far as athletic talent, I mean, Dusty is an incredible athlete and, yeah, somebody who, I respect a ton and has done an amazing job of keeping his life interesting and fun, and I think that's very admirable.
He kind of put a challenge out there for you. I believe it was, I forget which year it was now, but it was 94 maybe. He suggested that that you run the Voyager, and that's a 50-mile race right here just outside of Duluth, and you took him up on it.
Yeah, it wasn't something I was planning on doing. It was, you know, just a challenge. I think, you know, a lot of times we don't know, you know, why we do something, but yeah, you know, a buddy or somebody challenges us to something, and then all of a sudden we're running a marathon. And literally, I mean, I ran my first marathon, Grandma's Marathon, and a month later I was on the line at the Voyager 50 miler. And, you know, sometimes we just need, you know, an impetus to do something like that, some type of creative spark. And Dusty got me out there, and he, you know, we did some fun training out in the deer paths and game trails and ski trails of Duluth, training that spring, you know, through the snow melt of the spring, and then, you know, running through the mud and the transition, and then getting to Grandma's. And it was something that, of course, once I finished the Minnesota Voyager, I thought, never again. And literally, from that point, for some reason or another, decided to take up another one or two races, and then it took off from there.
In fact, I think you still hold the record there for that distance. Was it 6:41? I believe it's still the record.
It is. Yeah, it's one of my few course records that have stood out there. It's funny. I mean, course records are made to be broken.
Exactly.
And I've had a lot of records throughout the years get broken, but that's one that's kind of stuck around. I always forget about that.
Well, running seemed to be a niche that you found for yourself through this process, and it also led to As I mentioned before, you're valedictorian in high school. You think a lot about what you're doing, and you're well prepared. You came up with some changes that you thought were needed, and that was dietary changes in order to become better. You were running as hard as you could, but you wanted to be better.
Yeah, there came a point when I realized, you know, as far as the competitive sides of things, and just from a, you know, I'm sure I wanted to get better through running, but it was at the same time I was going through physical therapy school, and of course I had a mother with multiple sclerosis and chronic disease in the family, and seeing that impact her life and in my life, and started to realize in physical therapy schools and working in hospitals that, you know, to really get patients better, you know, I needed to look at all pieces of the puzzle of health and wellness, and nutrition seemed like an obvious one, especially when I brought this patient back to his bed and saw what he was eating and, you know, what we feed people in hospitals. I mean, people are supposed to be getting better when they're in this type of environment, and here we're feeding them some of the worst suitable food possible. And that's when it really dawned on me that if I wanted to get to my healthiest through competition and through sport, and then later in life, my body wouldn't be broken down and damaged from the rigorous running and training schedule, I needed to change some things. And that's when, you know, I came upon the book by Dr. Andrew Weil, Spontaneous Healing. Mm-hmm. And it kind of struck me right when I was in the middle of my physical therapy rotations that, you know, nutrition played a role. And from there, I started going, you know, transitioning towards a vegetarian and plant-based diet, and then went fully vegan in 1999 when a couple of my friends, Jess and Katie Koski, introduced me to Howard Lyman's Mad Cowboy. And he was a third-generation cattle rancher who went vegan. And I thought, okay, if this third-generation cattle rancher from Montana could go vegan, so can a Minnesota backwoods boy.
There was a lot of skeptics out there saying that endurance athletes really couldn't do what they need to do on a vegan or vegetarian diet. And you've shown through this book and definitely convinced me that it's not that hard if you want to explore possibilities.
Exactly. And I think that's what ultramarathoning did for me initially. Is, you know, it opened my mind up to the possibilities of the fact that I could run 50 miles, I could run 100 miles, I could run 135 miles, and at the same time realized, okay, if I can do that in running, open up my mind and possibilities, then I can do that through nutrition. And I grew up on, you know, basically meat and potatoes, pork chops and pot roasts, and then of course hunting and fishing. And so for me to switch over to, you know, a plant-based diet seemed, you know, very challenging, but at the same time I was like, you know, learning about all these amazing foods that I'd never heard of or tried before. And, you know, I went from a kid that hated vegetables to somebody who's eating a plant-based diet. And then of course in college I was eating a lot of fast food and realized that, okay, maybe eating, you know, 4 chicken sandwiches that are deep fried and, you know, 2 large order of fries really isn't the best way to fuel a dinner post training and then at work. So yeah, it's, you know, it's opened my mind, but it's also been, you know, a great experience. Like, I love learning about world cuisine and what other cultures have subsisted off of. And I think that's a neat thing, as well as, you know, learning, I guess, or relearning and being brought back for traditions. You know, my grandparents canned a lot. We had gardens in our family, and, you know, the importance of health and food was something that wasn't like a fad for them. It was a way of life. And that's something that, as I went plant-based and as I continued to explore, you know, I'm still learning things. I don't have it all down yet. But as I keep learning, I realize too, you know, what did grandma and grandpa eat? You know, that maybe they had some meat, but overall they were eating a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables that they grew out of their own garden and had on their farm.
We're speaking with Scott Jurek. Scott is a champion ultra marathoner and author of a new book called, a new best-selling book called Eat and Run. Scott, you won a pretty much unprecedented Western States, which was the preeminent ultra marathon trail run in the United States. You won it 7 years in a row. And in doing that, you became so well-known throughout the running world, but the running world is not as huge in ultra marathon thoughts as it could be, being not an Olympic sport. really when you showed up in Born to Run with Chris McDougall, the best-selling book Born to Run, which really revolutionized footwear and thoughts of how to run, that's when your name really got out there.
Yeah, I mean, I've had the pleasure of being in, you know, a lot of press throughout the years, but, you know, Born to Run introduced me to another segment of the population, and it's definitely been a great book, not only for the reasons that you said, but it reinvigorated the possibilities in people's minds. I mean, just like I was speaking about earlier, it sometimes takes a spark or a nudge to, like, change your life and do something different, and I've come into contact with countless people, not only on my own book tour, but meeting individuals when I speak or getting emails. I mean, people who've lost 100 pounds, 150 pounds, just because they read that book, they got inspired and thought, you know, I can be a runner too. It's not a perfect body type. It's not somebody who's genetically gifted. We're all made to run, and we can all do that. We can all run ultramarathons. And I think that's what Born to Run was so special about, and I had the opportunity just to be headed down to the Copper Canyon and interacted with the Tarahumarans at the same time Chris McDougall was down there, and he happened to write a book, but I was down there, you know, exploring my own reasons of why I ran, and never had any idea that there'd be a best-selling book written about it. So I think it's kind of a testament, much like for Caballa Blanco, who organized the race down there. He didn't know how many people were going to show up. He didn't know that one race of literally, you know, 45 people or so would then become, you know, this best-selling book. And it's, you know, and so many people, literally millions of people have been, you know, influenced by his story and our story. So it's very neat from that standpoint. You know, it's not about the fame. It's, you know, what little running gives you in terms of fame. It's more that, you know, people's lives are being changed, and it's exciting right now. Running is... is on a big boom, and there's a lot of excitement around it.
As I mentioned earlier, ultramarathons are not an Olympic sport, and as such, it's not easy to support yourself through a main career focus such as running that you've done. How has Born to Run changed that for you, or has it?
Yeah, it's... For all those listening, if you want to make a living, I definitely suggest another occupation. Ultramarathoning. You know, all of us. You know, it's taken me, you know, literally 14 years to get to the point where I could, quote, you know, be professional and just run. But, you know, it's not like I just get to go and run races and compete and train. I mean, now I'm, in terms of, you know, how has Born to Run changed my life? I mean, I've always given presentations for sponsors. I've worked with Brooks Sports and their design team on new product. And, you know, I don't get a sponsorship just because I run fast. I'm, you know, going out and doing appearances and interacting with people, which I totally love. But, you know, it's hard work. It's not a glamorous lifestyle, I think. A lot of people assume, oh, if you're a professional runner, you just get to train and do your thing. But, you know, sponsors and companies, you know, definitely value other things than just, you know, winning races. So for me, I've always had to work, you know, a 40, 50-plus hour a week job to basically support, you know, my running and support, put food on the table and pay the bills. But, you know, it's essentially something that I do, you know, 20, 30 hours a week between all the strength workouts and, you know, getting out on the track and running in the mountains and preparing. So it gets busy. And a lot of people, you know, it's like, how does, you know, say the average person manage that with a family and with a career? And you can do it. It just gets tricky, and there's just not a lot of prize money and money within the sport itself. So, and that may change. We're seeing more and more races with some prize money, and some individuals are able to go professional, but it's a pretty meager lifestyle. You have to live low to the ground, and that's the beauty of it, too. I like that in terms of pure, simple living.
One of the great things about in your new book, Eat and Run, are all the recipes that you spatter throughout the book. And for those of us reading that book and interested and wanting to know more, it couldn't be better, because there it is spelled right out. Here's how you can do it. Here's how you can try this out.
Exactly. And I wanted that because there's obviously a lot of people who have been asking me, Scott, when are you coming out with that cookbook? Because they know I love to cook. I have friends who come over and they're like, gosh, you got to get, a cookbook out, or, what's the recipe for this or that? And my mother was a home economist, a major in college, and got us cooking in the kitchen at a very young age. And so meanwhile, I was cooking, pot roasts and all sorts of meat and potato dishes and desserts. But I used that, creativity in the kitchen to expand upon my diet once I became plant-based and just love to cook. And I think it's an important part, as I mentioned, and mentioned in my book, my grandparents, I was kneading bread with my grandmother who used to cook 50 loaves of bread every 2 weeks. And, that was something, food and time in the kitchen was not only, important for just putting meals on the table, it was also a social connection, it was a cultural connection. I think it's important. So I wanted to include recipes. So rather than just have the cookbook, I did the memoir with, of course, some running tips and then the recipes because I thought I could blend it all together. I couldn't just do the running aspect and the stories about my races. I had to include the food and something I feel very passionate about.
And there were some great running tips that you share with everybody in this book as well. And I went out, I've been trying a few of them, trying to improve my technique. And so when I read about your breathing practices and learning how to breathe more through your diaphragm and then moved into, breathe through your nose. So, all right. I go out to the trail. There is no way I can do what you described there. So obviously, this is it's a process.
Yeah, it's a process. I mean, it's a learning process. And, I tried to give some tips, for somebody who can start off, and then you can also transition as you become better prepared. But as far as the nasal breathing, you definitely don't want to do it on uphills. You might want to do it on some flat, easy,
I don't think
easy
I can do
roads or bike paths before you go to that. But and that's the whole idea, too, with the book is it's meant for all runners of all abilities, and it's for the non-runner, too, who might be inspired to get out there and run or maybe make a different dish for their family for dinner, or somebody who's just looking for some great adventure stories, because I've traveled around the world and I tried to incorporate that as well into the recipes. So there's a little bit for everybody.
I could talk for hours with you, Scott, about various aspects of your book and running, but unfortunately you don't have much time. You're very busy right now, not only with your new book and also your running, but you're getting married next week.
Yeah, it's a little crazy right now. I'm doing it all in the last month and a half, and it's, when it rains, it pours, so to speak, and right now it's, lots of things happening, but, that's what makes life interesting, so I'm looking forward to some downtime and not organizing a book tour and getting out, and I just came back from Africa where I was traveling and working with the Nature Conservancy on a nonprofit project they feel very strongly about, and conserving wildlife and working with the local people, and including running with basically Maasai tribesmen and interacting with villages. So it was a really neat experience. But I'm looking forward to spending time at home and chilling out for a little bit.
Well, congratulations on your upcoming marriage. We've been speaking with Scott Jurek, and he has a brand new book out. In fact, it's a best-selling book. It's called Eat and Run. And, they can find it anywhere, I'm sure, Scott, because it's on Amazon's best-selling list.
Yep, you can get it anywhere online or go to your local bookstore. And there's even an audio version and, of course, e-version. So whether you like the old print format or the electronic version, you can get it through all online retailers in addition to your local retailer.
And I imagine if people just Google Scott Jurek, and that's J-U-R-E-K, they'll find your website as well.
Definitely. And there's a trailer for the book and a site for the book, so they can read more and get a couple of recipes off of there and get inspired from that and eventually read more, and maybe even we'll see them out on the trail and on the next ultramarathon, maybe the Spirit
Great.
50.
Well, thank you so much, Scott, for giving us your time.
Well, thanks for having me, and hello to all the folks up in the Great North.